Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's time for The Upswing on WTMJ, showcasing businesses, entrepreneurs, and community leaders throughout the great state of Wisconsin. Here's your host, Jeff Sherman.
Because I'm going to make this place yours.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Welcome to the Upswing Conversations, as always, each and every day, at the intersection of life, business, and community. Today, we're hitting home. Well, actually, homes. That's what we're going to be all about today. Homes, home ownership, building neighborhoods, and building communities. A friendly reminder, WTMJ.com, in the upper left, you can click on Listen Live wherever you are. Get the live stream, or you can watch live via YouTube. So WTMJ.com, both the icons on the upper left-hand side of the site. Really easy, really fun. So housing, housing repairs, housing shortages, new developments, repairing older homes, rebuilding neighborhoods, restoring communities, growing community. All of these topics have been on my mind and in the headlines lately. Revitalize Milwaukee transforms communities by providing free, critical home repairs and comprehensive services to veterans and seniors and people with disabilities. But that's just the beginning of what we're going to talk about today. There are really big, growing challenges facing lower-income homeowners in greater Milwaukee and across the region. And creative public and private solutions are required to find solutions. How can a city and nonprofits work together to improve access to affordable and quality housing? What role can energy efficiency and sustainability play in making housing more affordable and livable? And how can housing organizations better support homeowners after that initial purchase to ensure there's long-term stability? When houses get in disrepair, where can you turn to find, whoa, my gosh, the furnace, the boiler, whatever's happening? It's never easy, no matter where you live, no matter how qualified you are with repairs or not. There's a lot of questions when it comes to home repair. Thankfully, our guest today, Revitalize Milwaukee CEO Linnea Katz-Petted, has answers under her direction. Just quickly, a little bit of background information on Revitalize Milwaukee. It has grown its organizational funding from $40,000 to over $1.8 million annually today, structured an inspiring community network, and increased the diversity of projects which it serves to revitalize over 400 homes annually. I've served on a couple of local boards with Linnea, and I can attest to the fact that she builds collaborative relationships and is in what she does in the work each and every day for the greater good of the community and dives in with a wonderful positive entrepreneurial spirit, and that's what we like here at the Upswing. I'm just going to have Linnea come on, introduce herself, say hello before we go to the first break. Linnea, how are you this morning?
I'm amazing. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Good, good. So, what's do you have other meetings before the show today, or you come straight to the studio?
It's never rest for the wicked. So it started early at 7 a.m. and I've got stuff going on through the evening. So, yeah.
All right. Very good. Well, when we come back after the break, housing, and more housing, we're going to dive into Linnea's backstory. She's not a Milwaukee native, grew up in Calgary and was raised in Vancouver. And we're going to ask her why and how that process of growing up in Calgary and Vancouver got her to Milwaukee, but shaped the person she is today. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ.
There ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay. I got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know I can't slow down. I can't.
Welcome back to The Upswing. Our guest today, Linnea Katz-Petted, the CEO of Revitalize Milwaukee. Linnea, you're not a Milwaukee native, correct? So talk to us about your path to Milwaukee, please.
The deep, dark story.
Yes.
As you said, I was born in Calgary, grew up in Vancouver. I was a stockbroker in Vancouver. And I had an opportunity to help out a peer of mine from the United States to fill in on he had a very last minute need for consulting and to write some RFPs for a quasi-government organization. Yeah. So I ended up doing those for him, and I landed all the jobs that I had wrote. So they're like, oh, hold on a second. Would you like to come to the United States? And so I ended up moving to Washington, D.C. and heading up their consulting performance improvement and training, and then also classification consulting for the firm. And while I was there, I meet Paul, who's my husband.
Okay.
And then
and is Paul from the greater Milwaukee area?
He is. He grew up in West Dallas. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. And so we back then it was a chance meeting on AOL. It was not a chat, you know, or a dating site. But and then, you know, 25 years later in November, we'll be married. And I came to Milwaukee. When I first got here, I was working for U.S. Bank, heading up nine states for performance improvement and training as well.
Okay.
And then I decided that I really wanted to do something more meaningful and give back, and took a couple years off to try and figure out what that looked like, and then ended up going, you know, looking for the nonprofit sector. I'd been on multiple boards here as board chairs and as members, and then settled in on looking for a part-time, non-stress job.
Okay.
That was back in 2005.
All right. And the organization was founded in 2000, correct?
Correct.
And you joined in 2005.
Right.
All right. And really just with that kind of inside the heart, you said, all right, it's time to pursue nonprofit management, kind of get out of the day-to-day financial rat race, if you will, and, you know, give back and grow an organization that needed its that needed the assistance at the time.
You know, honestly, it was a part-time, like temporary in my mind. They wanted me to double the number of homes that we were doing on an annual basis. And given, you know, my business background, you know, I can reach out to 10 companies and get them to sign on no problem. But that was where the magic happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talking to individuals, talking to homeowners, just giving them a call back brought them to tears.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. So.
All right. Well, how can go back to kind of growing up in Canada, yeah. And we talked a little bit before the show just about globalizing our thinking when mm-hmm. it comes to implementing solutions and finding creative ways to create change. What did you take anything out of your childhood that you can see, hey, this worked in my hometown and it can work in America?
Yeah. I had a lot of personal experiences that were pretty rough. I've been homeless. I've been on welfare. And all of those things, I think, really allowed me to value home and value people and want to help. And I've always had a propensity to care more than I probably should about others. And then bringing that here, it really struck me that there was not a lot going on. There was intention, but not actual action or impact. And so when I look around from a global standpoint, there's a lot of different views on how do we take care of fellow, you know, residents and citizens that maybe don't have what everyone else has.
Right.
And I think that there's some very myopic thinking of one-to-one, but we need to think about group, you know, concepts and look to our European partners specifically to say, you know, how do we incorporate potentially, you know, multi-use housing, but not necessarily have a, you know, a rental component. Maybe, you know, elderly individuals are cared for by college students who, as part of their rent, is to, you know, spend time with them, with seniors, or cook for them or things like that. And I think that there'd be the byproduct of that would be a stronger and richer community, both from a financial standpoint, but also from an individual standpoint.
Yeah, and finding, you know, whose responsibility is that? Does it fall upon all of us? Is it organizations like yours? Is it the municipalities or the governments? It's really a collaborative venture that when people are able to stay in their homes for a longer time, you're building more stability in communities no matter where you live.
Right.
And that's truly important.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can all say that, you know, I have mine, good luck getting yours, but how is that going to end for the community? And it certainly is from an entrepreneurial standpoint. You know, we want to raise the elevation of people's ability to build generational wealth, especially in Milwaukee. And in order to do so, you know, it can't be you know, a singular focus of just taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's proven time and time again, the more we, you know, share a little bit, even just a little bit, that can come back to you in folds.
Yeah. Well, I want to get into the mission of Revitalize Milwaukee, but in my community, we live in Shorewood, and actually just last week at a special meeting, the Village Board met and discussed transforming three of Shorewood's publicly owned parking lots into affordable housing developments. So I want to talk about that after the break and just see how Revitalize Milwaukee connects around affordable housing issues throughout the greater Milwaukee area. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing, affordable housing, community building, and more. Linnea Katz-Petted, the CEO of Revitalize Milwaukee. So, Linnea, officials kind of all over the region are looking to invest dollars to kind of tackle the mismatch between where residents work and where they can afford to live in greater Milwaukee in the suburbs. And a lot of people say that that success requires changing the zoning laws so that we can get more affordable housing built in a greater number of communities. Is your organization involved in some of those ongoing discussions with communities?
Absolutely. From a feedback and an education standpoint, we're happy to be at the table and have been at many of the tables. I think long term, that needs to happen in order for us to be able to, as you said, have a continuing and developing workforce that can sustain the community.
Yeah. And as you look at, you know, there's oftentimes some of that, well, not in my backyard sentiments that happen in our communities. And you get through that with thoughtful discussion, hopefully. But how do you get over it when communities are being a little bit more stubborn? I mean, have you had those type of conversations within your group and maybe your board and colleagues?
Yeah, it's, you know, the racism and the judgmental thought process is a very real thing here in Milwaukee. And I think we haven't been able to move the needle as much as anyone of us would like to. But it's certainly, you know, I don't shy away from those conversations, as you know.
Right.
And I also hopefully, you know, at the end of the day, we can find a way to see the benefit of having, you know, multiple generations and multiple different races and communities, because, you know, again, at the end of the day, we're all just trying, we want the same things. We want a roof over our head, we want housing, and we want to be able to live in a community that we, you know, we enjoy.
Yeah. So what are some of the, or how do people kind of overcome those biggest challenges, especially for lower income homeowners in greater Milwaukee that are focused on, all right, I've been in my home for 25 years and suddenly this happens. I don't want to move because that is overwhelming and I like where I live, but there's huge repairs coming. How does your organization work to address those?
Sure. So just to touch on the situation right now is that these houses have been in disrepair for a long, long time. And unfortunately, there's a huge segment of population that's choosing between basic needs and food and medicine. We all have faced rising costs of everything, and it is very much on a the homeowners that we serve are beyond resilient, and I give them so much kudos, not only to be resilient in the neighborhoods that they have seen change over, you know, the last few years, but also to be able to get up in the day and look for help.
Yeah.
So we go in there, and one of the most important things for me is to make sure we meet people where they're at, right? So I'm never going to tell somebody how they should live or what they should do in their home. We're here as a resource, and we really want them to have a quality of life, have dignity, and hopefully restore hope for those people who haven't, who have lost that. And we do that by, you know, repairing toilets, bathrooms, putting in a walk-in shower. There's a huge issue with people falling and dying in their homes. So we do focus on accessibility modifications. And there's a lot of misnomers, too, about that whole scenario. You know, you don't have to be elderly. You can have diabetes and not have, you know, the same feeling and the nerve feeling on the bottom of your foot.
It could just be a ramp. It could be a railing. It could be just, you know, a way that you can get around your house in an easier way. But again, you have to have somebody to turn to that can implement that in the correct manner and not just, hey, I'm going to a contractor who you want to have the full process in front of you so you're doing it correctly and safely.
Yeah. And a lot of times these homeowners, I mean, literally they're going from dollar to dollar. So there's no, you know, for them to even fantasize about hiring a contractor is just really out of realm. And then, you know, to say, well, they'll go to, you know, the city and get a 0% loan, which is great for some people. But for our long-term homeowners, that's not a viable option. So going in and assessing the situation, really helping them stay there and live in their home, there's not enough nursing care. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's not enough assistance for in-home care. So we do everything we can to try and help people, again, to be as independent as possible. And we do it all for free. We have generous sponsors and generous grants that allow us to do that.
And how do you work then specifically with the city and the older people in mm-hmm. in all your districts? Like, what is that interaction?
You had to go there, didn't you?
Yes. Hey, that's right. It's a collaborative process.
It is a collaborative process. Some are more collaborative than others.
Okay.
It could be better, collaboration. I think sometimes we're competing on our goals. But I think also,
how so? What do you mean by that?
I think, you know, sometimes in the communities, there's a lot of, support for the aldermen, and the alderman doesn't necessarily want to do things that will upset some of the more the vocal individuals. And then there's other times where, you know, they're completely on board and they're supportive. You know, we have our big event every year, our block build, and we rely on them immensely for that. And, you know, to give a shout out to Alderman Perez, he's been incredibly supportive of our work and has gone out of the way to make sure that he can help remove barriers and roadblocks that we might be having along the process.
Well, we're going to talk about the block build program when we come back. And I want to talk about the $10 million that the organization secured to be distributed around lead abatement programs. Mm-hmm. Revitalizing Milwaukee through corporate partnerships and collaboration. Linnea Katz-Petted, the CEO of Revitalize Milwaukee, joins us today. Linnea, one of the really cool things I think your organization does, I mean, there are many, but you have a coffee and community sessions that you do regularly, I think quarterly, where you bring together neighborhoods and different business leaders. Talk about those a little bit and what you hope to accomplish at each one of those meetings.
Right. Thank you. So, a while back, in early in my career, I was really frustrated at being in meetings and having different segments of people that never crossed their, you know, each other's paths,
right.
And then not wanting to branch out. And so, Coffee in Community was born out of a passion for connecting people that maybe never would have met before, from a resource standpoint, but also from a support standpoint. So we invite our entire network, and there's intentional networking built into the front end of it, and then also the back end, and then we have an educational speaker that comes in that would be applicable to a wide variety of audiences. Mm-hmm. One of my other rules that I like to do is that I never leave a meeting that I'm putting on without an action item. So when people register for Coffee Community, there's a directory that they put their names into and their contact information and whatever they would like that to be shared with other people. And every single attendee gets a copy of this directory so that they can follow up on their own without having to, go through me or, you know, be introduced. And when we go through the first part of the Coffee Community, everyone stands up. So you have an opportunity to say, you know, hey, Jeff stands mm-hmm. up and you didn't get a chance to say hi.
Yeah.
You could say, hey, Jeff, I saw you at Coffee Community. Love to connect. Here's what I, can offer or right. you can, do for me kind of thing.
Yeah, can really build intentional connections that
exactly.
way. And it's not, sure, it's about showcasing the organization. But at the same time, if somebody says, hey, I'm not going to give to Revitalize Milwaukee, you're going to showcase a way to, hey, how about this group or how about that group? Here's an
correct.
Adjacent group that we already work with that could use your time and talent.
Yeah. And it's all about spreading the word of, how do we build our community and outside of ourselves? We're the vehicle that's obviously, holding it. But, our funders come, and everyone's open. I mean, again, our group is really dedicated to the empowerment and the elevation of our community. And so how that looks doesn't just start and stop with my organization. It starts and stops with people.
Yeah.
And if we can spread the ability and make it easy for people to get involved, then that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. So one of the issues that your organization is tackling is lead paint abatement. So what's the easiest way first to spot lead paint? Obviously banned in 1978 for many harmful effects, but still present in a lot of homes today. And how is Milwaukee making progress to address lead poisoning and other environmental health concerns? Because you had a $10 million grant, correct?
Yeah. So easiest way is chipping. Chipping paint is going to be a big red flag. We've been working with the health department for the last couple of years and worked really well with them. And their intention is to really put a stop to the lead paint poisoning. And so we partner with them to identify potential individuals who are under the age of six who have been identified as getting lead poisoned. And then we go in and do everything for free, whether you're a homeowner or you're a renter, and we'll abate the property so that we can hopefully reduce the impact of lead poisoning, because there's lead poisoning and then there's a long-term impact on our community with brain development and a variety of other issues that happen when you are continuously exposed to high levels of lead.
And so you provide the information, obviously, that children, pregnant women should be tested by their primary care doctors. Is there an available funding per home that's available that you distribute?
No, it really depends on the home. So the first step is to obviously get the referral from the health department. And then depending on the level of their poisoning or levels of lead in the system, then they're elevated to, you know, a first priority or second or third. And then going into the home, we do we use XRF machines to identify all of the lead surfaces in the home and then put together a scope of work to abate. So some homes might, you know, be a $20,000 abatement. Some might be a $100,000 abatement. It really is, you know, my goal is to look at the home in such a critical manner that hopefully we never have to go back to that home to find more lead paint ever again.
Okay. After the break, there's a lot of need. I want to talk to Linnea about how Revitalize Milwaukee chooses which houses should be tackled first, and we'll get into Block Build MKE and talk about how that program helps residents in need with home repairs. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Linnea Katz-Pettit, the CEO of Revitalize Milwaukee, joins us today for a wonderful discussion around community building, keeping people in their homes longer, and building our community neighborhood by neighborhood. So, Linnea, is Greater Milwaukee making strides against kind of longstanding issues of racial inequity and kind of lack of resources in underserved communities? From your CEO lens at Revitalize Milwaukee, are we making progress?
I think we're intending on making progress, and I think there's pockets of communities that are definitely moving forward. The attention is certainly there, and the will is certainly there. Going forward, we're going to need a lot more collaboration and a lot more, I think, investments from corporations, both in time and funds. Especially the new corporations that are coming to town. And there's certainly a lot who are doing a tremendous amount to give back to their communities, which is fantastic. But I think as we continue to look at retention from both an employee standpoint, a homeowner standpoint, giving back to your community and allowing your volunteer or people in your companies to volunteer is a really important way to engage your workforce in order to make sure that they stay and they're doing something good for the company, not just coming to work every day.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about recruitment and retention a lot on the show, and often if you're involved in a civic group, you get integrated, you get on a committee, you get in a board leadership position, and suddenly a job offer comes from somewhere else, and you're like, wow, you know what? I love this organization. Mm-hmm. I love my commitment here. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get that in another community. So it's so important to plug in on the civic level for sure. So what is Block Build MKE, and how do you help residents in need with their home repairs with this program?
Sure. So this is our signature event. So this is a, it was a 1 day and now it's a 2 day, all intents and purposes. And we're going to be in the Mani neighborhood this year. And our goal is to, rehab between 15 and 30 homes in 1 day.
Mm.
So we go in, it's quite an undertaking.
So that, how many volunteers?
600 to 800 people.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we have some key strategic partners, obviously the neighborhood. We also work really closely with Home Depot, MPD, the city, aldermen. And we want to make sure that we are going in and doing everything we can within, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 blocks to help that community meet their goals for sustainability in their homeowners to be able to stay in their homes. So again, we go in there and we're not telling them what to do. We're not saying this is how you should live, but we're there to support them in staying in their homes. And so a lot of the houses that we do, there might be a failing porch. There might be a bathroom that needs to be gutted. A lot of plumbing, electrical, windows, structural issues sometimes inside. And then our goal is to, again, go in there. It's almost like extreme home makeover.
Yeah. So the work is actually done in those 2 days. Like,
correct.
You are, hey, here's the tools,
it
here's the
it.
Wood. Like, we're going.
Yeah. 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 And it's a very fine-toothed comb of process, experience, preparation, a love checklist.
And how do you pick the homes in the district for that event? Like,
yeah.
Is it you go home to home beforehand and
correct.
Identify the need, or is it just, hey, we're going for it?
Yeah, no. So we ask the residents, you
okay.
know, it's their choice, but where we go. So residents have to put what's called an interest form in to us. And then we go around and try and figure out where the cluster of the most homes would be in one area, because from a security standpoint, we have, you know, thousands of materials, and then also people, you know, we shut down the neighborhood basically in order to turn it to a construction site so we can move easily throughout the neighborhood and make sure everyone's safe. But, you know, it truly is for people who wanted to, you know, apply to us. And then based on that cluster, we move forward with those groups.
And information on the website, and if people want to volunteer for that, are you still accepting volunteers?
Absolutely. So there is a we're accepting sponsorships and volunteers. So volunteers, it's a long day, but it's an incredibly rewarding day because you get to go into someone's house and you get to talk to that person. It's a real life person. They've lived in their home for, you know, 25 to 30 years. And oftentimes, no one's been able to help them the way that we will be able to help them. And so, again, it's a dignifying, important task to give back to our fellow homeowners. And I guarantee that maybe more than half of our homeowners come through with a different understanding of what people are like, maybe that don't look like them, and vice versa for our volunteers that go into these homes. There's a lot of misconceptions about our neighborhoods and a lot of unwarranted I think assumptions that we are trying to break down those barriers by, you know, neighborhood by neighborhood. And one of the most beautiful byproducts of this is that the neighborhood themselves become closer as well.
Very good. When we come back from the break, we'll wrap up our discussion with Linnea Katz-Petted from Revitalize Milwaukee, get her advice that she would give to aspiring nonprofit leaders and change makers in Milwaukee. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Thankful that Linnea Katz-Petted, CEO from Revitalize Milwaukee, joins us today. Growing the budget from the organization, starting at, what, $40,000, going up to $2 million, now at almost $10 million. Probably a lot of things, a lot of plans on the books. What are you most proud of in your tenure as CEO, Linnea?
The impact that we've had and the lives we've been able to change, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, the people that we've been able to help are incredible, and they've made just as much of an impact on me as I have on them.
And in terms of the, if people want to get their homes in the system, what does that process look like? Say you have a friend or family member that said, "Hey, we need a new boiler, we need a new water heater. We don't have the resources." How do you prioritize those?
Sure. So we have an amazing team that processes the application, and we vet all of our homeowners. So it's based on need, resources, and then also, you know, if it's a basic need. So obviously, if there's an emergency, that's handled pretty quickly within 24 to 48 hours.
Okay.
And then other homeowners go through their application process, and they can call our office and get our application. They can download it on our website.
Okay.
And then a lot of our partners in the neighborhood also have access to our website and also applications. So we can, you know, we're willing to meet them. If somebody can't get to the office, we can always drop on by. You know, there's all kinds of ways, but the most important thing is just to kind of check out what the requirements are,
mm-hmm.
And then we try and give resources for other places if, for whatever reason, someone's not a good fit for the work that we do.
Okay, so what's your advice for kind of young, upcoming, aspiring nonprofit leaders and change makers in Greater Milwaukee?
Mm-hmm.
Give us the words of wisdom, Linnea.
I think. There's two things. One, don't stop dreaming. You know, the this work is really, really hard,
yeah.
But it's all worth it. And you can't get there by looking at it as a job. You have to look at it as a passion, and you have to give yourself more than you probably thought you could. In the same token, take care of yourself. I have not been one that has been really great at that, and I think. Putting your own mask on first is really going to be critical because when you do care, you really can go down a rabbit hole of caring too much and then you put yourself at risk in the process.
Yeah. Very good. All right. Well, congratulations on all the hard work and work that you put in each and every day at Revitalize Milwaukee. We'll stay tuned to the Block Build MKE program. And coming up tomorrow, the future of almost everything. Every Thursday, Steve Glenn, Martin Moore. I'm out tomorrow, but Steve and Martin will drive. We've been practicing. We've been teeing up wonderful topics for tomorrow. You're going to be amazed. We'll see you on Friday.